people talking bad about the way we have to live here in this country. Harping on wars we fight and griping about the way things ought to be. And I don't mind them switching sides and standing up for things they believe in. When they're running down my country, man, they're walking on the fight beside me. Yeah, walking on the fight inside of me. Running down the way of life, I'm fighting and fought to die to be. If you don't love it, leave it. Let this song I'm singing be a warning. You're running down my country, man. You're walking on the fight inside me. The guy who claims he just don't believe in fight. And I wonder just how long the rest of us can count on being free. They love our milk and honey, but they preach about some other way of living. When they're running down my country horse, they're walking on the fight inside of me. Yeah, walking. Down real life, I'm fighting and fought and died. If you don't love it, leave it. Let this song I'm singing be a warning. When you run down my country, man, you walking on the fight inside of me. Yeah, walking on the fight inside me. Running down real life. If you don't love it, leave it. Let this song I'm singing be a warning. And you run down my country, man. You walking on right beside me.
Yes, when you're running down my country, you're walking down the fighting side. I mean, that's the name of this program here on lightresistanceradio.com. Well, lots more news and views for our people. And, of course, those are the European founding settler people of the Dominion of Canada, the United States of America, the Dominions of Australia and New Zealand, the Republic of South Africa, Rhodesia, and all of you who may be listening this morning in the European heartland. Now, there's sad news. August 22nd, freedom of speech took a big kick in the testicles in Canada. The satirical tabloid newspaper Your War News was sentenced to the maximum 1 year in jail under Canada's notorious hate law by a Toronto judge, Richard Blouin. Well, I'm going to come back to that a little bit later, but I want to play a statement by Maxime Bernier. He's the leader of the People's Party of Canada, and he's running for, his party's running in the upcoming October 21st federal election. And he has been criticized for his hard-nosed stand on immigration, as it's very good to see. He's one of those politicians, one of those very few politicians, who, when faced with withering fire from the politically correct, does not back down. And this is his statement on immigration.
Maxime Bernier says if elected, he would build a fence at the Canadian border to stop asylum seekers from entering the country at irregular crossing points.
We cannot be the welfare state of the planet.
The head of the People's Party of Canada also says he'd reduce immigration levels to 150,000 people a year. He says Canada can't afford to keep admitting 350,000 immigrants a year because the country must look after its own citizens first. I'm happy to welcome the People's Party of Canada leader himself to the program, Maxime Bernier, joining me from Ottawa today. Good to see you, sir.
Thank you. Thank you very much.
Let's start with the fence idea. It's a pretty big border. Where would you build this fencing and what would it cost?
First of all, only where the illegal migrants are crossing our country illegally. So Roxham Road in Quebec, and that's a little fence over there. What I don't want our RCMP officers to welcome them. They are illegal migrants, and so we must be sure that if they want to come to our country, they have to follow our immigration law, and that's very important for us.
I think the correct term is irregular migrants, is it not?
They're illegal migrants. They're not crossing at the official point of entry for our country, so they're illegals. And what we want to do, we want to be sure that we'll help the real refugees that needs to be helped in other countries and where their life is in danger. I don't believe that these people who are crossing our border illegally in Quebec, I don't believe that their life is in danger in the state of New York.
It's not illegal to seek asylum though, is it?
It is illegal to cross our border at another, at not an official point of entry. So that's why we need to be sure that these people who want to cross our border will cross our border where everybody is crossing borders.
I understand in your speech yesterday you also said you would expect immigrants to take a values test. What would that look like?
Well, I want people that are coming here that will share our Canadian values. Our Canadian values, as you know, is the base on the Western civilization values. The rule of law, equality between men and women, respect, tolerance. And yes, I want our immigration officers to have a face-to-face interview with them. As you said in the beginning, we'll have less than 150,000 a year. I think it's important to have a pause there. 350,000 a year, or like it would be in 2020, it is not sustainable. I don't want our country to be like in Europe, in certain countries, like in UK, in France, in Belgium, where they have huge difficulties to integrate their immigrants. So that's why we must have fewer numbers of immigrants, and being sure that these people would integrate our society and be part of our society. To be part of our society, it would be important to do an investigation and an interview with them, yes.
Right, but back to the values testing in specifics, there's nothing wrong with a face-to-face interview. I think people would expect that. But who determines what are Canadian values, and what would some of those values be, in your opinion?
It's the Western civilization values, like I just said. It's what we share: freedom, free markets, free speech, all that make this country great and prosperous. So we want these people to come here and share these values. So yes, during the interview, they will have some questions that they will have to answer, and we'll see. We want people who are coming here like that, like they did in the past. You know, our immigration system was okay a couple of years ago. But now it's a mass immigration and open borders, and I'm against open borders. I think we must protect our sovereignty and our borders.
Immigration is central to Canada's economic prosperity, Mr. Bernier, and population growth.
Absolutely.
As well. So why would you try and limit the amount of eligible workers coming into the country?
Because right now, you know, as I said, the 300,000 people that are coming to Canada every year, only 26% of them are economic immigrants, and our people are coming here because we need their skills and their background and their competence. Only 26% of them, so 74% of people who are coming to Canada are refugees or under reunification of family. And you're right saying that we want more economic immigrants. That's why we'll have a fewer global number. But at the end, we'll have a bigger ratio for economic immigrants. That's what we need. And actually, our immigration policy must be there to fulfill the economic needs of our country, yes.
How do you respond to criticism that the Liberals are actually happy you're running on a so-called populist platform? Because that way, you may poach votes that might otherwise go Conservative or to some other parties, and therefore you will actually be helping the Liberals in the next election.
No, what we're doing will... being sure that this country will be like that in 25 years, and we are working for all Canadians, and we have support of people coming from different political backgrounds. Yesterday at our rally, I had people who came to me that voted Liberals, other former Conservative, and we have people also that didn't vote at the last federal election because they didn't believe in traditional politicians, there's 30% of the population who did not vote at the last election. The participation rate was 70%. So we are a kind of a coalition behind strong ideas, and we are the only principal alternative based on individual freedom and respect.
You said earlier that you would be able to front a candidate in every riding before the federal election. Where are you on that?
307 candidates right now. We have more candidates than the Green, more candidates than the NDP, more candidates than the Liberals, and we'll have 338 candidates, actually, yes, in every riding in a couple of weeks from now. And in the 17 and 18 of August, we'll have our first training conference here in Ottawa with our candidates. So we are a real alternative, and people, I think, like the way that we're doing politics. No more political correctness, and we are speaking about the real issues that are important for the future of this country, like immigration.
I have to leave it there in the interest of time, Mr. Bernier, but thank you for yours. People's Party of Canada leader Maxime Bernier with me today.
Thank you very much. Have a nice day.
You too.
That was People's Party of Canada leader Maxime Bernier. This is Paul Fromm, and you're on the fighting side of me here on WhiteResistanceRadio.com. Well, I led off this broadcast by giving you the executive summary of the bad news, and that is that Dr. James Sears, the editor for the last 4 or 5 years of the satirical publication Your War News, was sent to jail today for the maximum, and that was 1 year. But that doesn't even really quite capture what really happened. First of all, today's sentencing hearing started off with a decision by the judge on a motion that Dr. Sears had made seeking a mistrial on the basis of inadequate incompetent representation by his lawyer. And he argued that Dr. Sears had argued in several affidavits that his lawyer, Dean Embry, had thrown the case. Dr. Sears had written a masterful submission going over the emails between him and Mr. Embry over a number of months, where he repeatedly demanded that Mr. Embry lead expert witnesses. Dr. Sears had lined up at least one such witness, E. Michael Jones, the American professor and author, and there were others. But anyway, Dean Embry refused repeatedly to lead such witnesses, and in the end, the defense really had to say was lame. Now, I've had a fair bit of experience in hate law cases. There have not been a lot in Canada, but I have been present in some, and have certainly closely monitored others. In this particular case, the Crown, who goes first, of course, had led two expert witnesses. One was a supposed expert in anti-Semitism, and he concluded that Your War News had many anti-Semitic comments in it that were typical, so he thought, of anti-Semitism throughout the ages. The second witness was a militant feminist lawyer from British Columbia, and she concluded that Your War News was sexist, misogynistic, and anti-feminist. Now, the interesting thing in law is, even if something is anti-Semitic, whatever that means, I guess very broadly critical of Jews, or misogynistic, doesn't like women, or critical of women, or feminism, that doesn't mean it's hateful. And the standard, supposedly, is willful promotion of hatred. So the Crown's expert witnesses could have been challenged on that basis. Dean Embry challenged them only very, very slightly. Now, the more usual procedure would have been for the defense then to lead its expert witnesses. And I strongly urged expert witnesses like E. Michael Jones, who would say that the criticism of Jews contained in Your War News was essentially factual, historical. And similarly, some of the views about women. Then there's a difference between criticizing a group or saying that they are a menace, for instance, like radical feminists, and promoting hatred against them. And there are defenses under the hate law. One is sincerely held religious belief. Many of the criticisms of Jews contained in Your War News, certainly in my opinion, fell under that. Sincerely held religious beliefs that traditional Christianity has some very definite opinions about Jews having called for the death of Christ, let's say. They did not physically execute him, or at least the Jewish leadership, the Sanhedrin, did. And of the long-standing hostility between Christianity and Jews. It's always in modern times portrayed as the hostility of Christians toward Jews. But there's a very considerable hostility of Jews toward Christians. So that would be a defense. Another defense would be truth. And many of the criticisms of women, or I should say radical feminism, in Your War News, and many of the criticisms of Jews are in fact historically true. So truth is a defense. And E. Michael Jones and other witnesses that the defense would like to have led would have attested to that. A third area, and a very important area, is satire. Now, as opposed to a political pamphlet, an ideological, let's say, manifesto, Your War News is satire. Now, satire involves exaggeration and humor in order to make a point. Now, Your War News is was incredibly zany, over the top, and riotously funny. And as most satire does, exaggerate. For instance, I was asked today about some comments in Your War News about women. I guess the freedom spokesman after Dr. Sears was sentenced. So the media was all over me with some very hostile questions. And the reporter for City TV said, but Your War News said it isn't rape if she doesn't bleed. I said, well, that was a quotation taken out of context, and it was satirical. And for an example of satire, one of the great satirical pieces of writing in the English language was Jonathan Swift's A Modest Proposal. And the modest proposal was that a way to fight poverty would be for the poor to eat their children. Cannibalism. And in the times in which Mr. Swift wrote, in the 18th century, and this would hold true in the next century as well, there was a considerable problem of orphan children, destitute children, hungry children. London was crawling with children well into the late in the 19th century who were homeless or virtually homeless. Their parents very poor, the children not getting enough food, and that was a social problem. Jonathan Swift's modest proposal was cannibalism. The poor might have enough to eat if they ate their own children, and therefore there wouldn't be so many hungry children as well. Was this actually prescription for cannibalism and genocide? No. It was meant to be humorous, exaggerate, with a bit of a nudge. Maybe we should have more compassion for the poor. And you would think that intelligent people would be able to read something that is satirical, humorous, and get the joke. Whether you agree with it, with the theme or not, but at least get the joke. But no, we are dealing with the most grim, humorless, cultural Marxists, and humor is not part of their world. To make that point that it's satirical, or to, I should say, to hammer it down in a trial, I strongly urge that an expert professor or an expert in satire be called as a witness to make that point. the James Sears lawyer refused to do that. He refused to carry on other lines of questioning or cross-examination. In his final submission, he said that Your War News was in fact hate literature, but it didn't violate the law. Well, that's like saying, well, my client actually did murder the victim, but it really wasn't all that bad. Well, I mean, this is no defense. It's laughable. I am not surprised that Your War News lost. The judge, I believe, was hopelessly biased. His comments in his verdict, this was the worst hate propaganda he'd ever seen. If this wasn't hate propaganda, nothing was. Well, then I would have to say nothing was. This was satire. This is humor. This is not advocating hate or harm to anybody. What the judge did in cobbling together his guilty verdict was simply to selectively quote from the expert reports of the professor who's purported to be an expert on anti-Semitism and the militant feminist who purported to be an expert on sexism and misogyny, and he, to his own liking, concluded that Your War News was hate. James Sears very rightly, I think, dismissed his lawyer early in the sentencing section of the trial for blowing the case, for not following instructions. Okay, but so the first item of business today was to rule on Dr. James Sears' motion for a mistrial. In other words, because of incompetent or inadequate representation, he had not gotten, it had not been a fair trial. Now this is a tough argument. I think the judge let him make it, only to appear to be fair. And now when I say let him make it, this involved several previous appearances in court, and then with the final decision being rendered today. And the judge not surprisingly came down on the side of the lawyer, Dean Embry. Lawyers, like most professions, stick together. It was, all along, I believe, a hard sell. And what the judge decided was that Dr. Sears had been part of the decision. Well, actually, he hadn't. The only thing is he had not fired Dean Embry during the bulk of the trial, even though he objected strongly. It's all documented in emails. Dara had wanted expert witnesses, had insisted on expert witnesses, and Dean Embry, Dr. Sears' defense lawyer, simply refused to go along with that. The judge concluded that Mr. Embry had defended him competently, and that he had approached the case tactically and professionally. This was not incompetence or worse. This is what this was a lawyer doing his job. It just didn't work. Well, I would say it was not. It was tactics. The tactics were terrible. And the tactics were not ones that Dr. Sears agreed with. The problem here, and the judge knew this, is that a client, and Dr. Sears on a number of occasions pointed out that he, Dr. Sears, is an intelligent man, but he's not a lawyer, he's not a professional, and he and he did not entirely know his way around the law. He's not supposed to. The law is very complex. It's made deliberately complex by lawmakers for a number of reasons, to intimidate the public. So they just give you the executive summary. Don't spread hate against privileged minorities. Well, I'm not sure what hate is. I just better not criticize. And that's it. I mean, that's really what it's all about. So if you find yourself in legal proceedings, most people, laymen, I think quite rightly, believe they need a lawyer. I mean, the lawyer is the profession. He or she is being trained in the law, and that you require their services. As with medicine. If you have a pain, say, in your stomach, you're not immediately sure what it is, and it's fairly severe, you go to a doctor. And the doctor presumably will do some diagnosis and come up with a conclusion that you've got this or that. you rely on that doctor. I mean, he knows the medicine, the medical procedures, you don't. So the doctor then prescribes some medicine for you. You may think it's the wrong medicine. You take it and it's not going very well. And actually the pain's increasing. What do you do? Part of you says, well, I must trust the doctor. I have misgivings. I don't think this is the right thing. I don't think the doctor's diagnosed it correctly. But you know, he's the doctor. He can put MD after his name. I can't. I should go along with him. And I know many people who've been in medical situations like this, where they find themselves genuinely torn. What should I do? Surely the doctor knows what he's doing. On the other hand, I doubt that he does. I have serious doubts. Well, it's the same thing with Dr. Sears. Now, according to the judge, unless he fired the lawyer at that time, then he has to live with the results. Just because the lawyer's ridiculous tactics didn't work isn't enough to grant a mistrial. And my feeling was, well, that's what you'd expect a lawyer to say about another lawyer. Well, that you may not have agreed with the tactics, but they were legitimate tactics, and just because they didn't work, well, tough. So, that having been said, that the judge rejected the motion for a mistrial onto the sentence, and this is where things really got bloody-minded. The judge said that the offense the willful promotion of hatred was so severe that it deserved 18 months in jail. He said, "It is impossible, in my view, to conclude that Mr. Sears should receive a sentence of any less than 18 months in jail. Mr. Sears promoted hate to a vast audience in an era where online exposure to this material inexorably leads to extremism and the potentials of mass casualties." That was never in evidence. There's no call in Your War News for violence against men or women, for extermination, for assault, or anything. This is just pure CNN political fantasy. Anyway, he concluded that this was, in this modern age of communications, because this was a communication to a relatively mass audience, that it was specially heinous. He then referenced a case back in 1990 of a man named Savonimir Lalas. Savonimir Lalas was a 21-year-old, I believe, Toronto skinhead. And he spray-painted some nasty slogans on a Toronto synagogue. At his trial, he was given a year in prison. Now, poor Mr. Lalas, in my opinion, badly advised, pleaded guilty. Well, you know, okay, once you plead guilty, that's the end of it for you. That's your plea. And so the judge duly sentenced him to a year in prison, despite the guilty plea, and despite the fact he apologized to the Jewish community. He got a year in prison. The harshness of the sentence. Don't forget, it's graffiti. It's graffiti. Nobody's hurt. Now, I'd be the first to agree, graffiti is wrong. You don't have the right to go around spray painting slogans, whatever they might be, on property that's not yours. That's the crime. What he spray painted, whether it was, I think it was stuff about Jews, it was stuff about Jews. I think there was a swastika as well. Or whether it was just some crudity, like fuck off, or some gang tag, it doesn't matter. The crime is the vandalism. But that's not the way Canadian law sees it. If the crime seems motivated by hate against privileged groups, in this case Jews, then a stiffer sentence is merited. So the judge, in my opinion, absolutely threw the book at Mr. Lalas. A crime that probably should have resulted in a $200 fine, or perhaps 30 days in jail, was a year in jail. So on that basis, though, the judge said, well, Mr. Lalas, number one, way back in 1990, pleaded guilty. Number two, he was young. I think at the time of the crime, he was 19. But at the time of sentencing, I think he was about 21. But anyway, okay, he was still young. And the audience for the communication was relatively small. I guess those would be passers-by at a synagogue. Okay, in contrast, Your War News had a circulation of over 300,000. It was a repeated publication. You know, it wasn't just spray-painted on a building once. It published a good number of editions over several years. It had a much bigger audience, and so therefore the scope of the communication, according to the judge, and this on this I would agree, was far greater. As also he said, Dr. Sears pleaded innocent, as if that in itself was some sort of affront. And at age 55, Dr. Sears would be far more mature and seasoned than a man who was 19 when the alleged crime was committed. So therefore, if Savonimir Lalas deserved a 1 year for spray painting some nasty slogans on a synagogue, Dr. Sears deserved 18 months. Now, it was never not quite clear whether he thought that there was 18 months for each offense, each count. He was convicted of willful promotion of hatred against Jews and willful promotion of hatred against women, or whether that was in total. The judge's comments could be read in several ways. So that was one thing. Anyway, he concluded Dr. Sears deserved at least 18 months in jail. Well, the problem is the law, the way the Crown proceeded by summary conviction would only allow a sentence of 6 months. What the Crown had demanded, though, was 6 months consecutive for each count. And that's exactly what the judge ruled. 6 months consecutive, so which adds up to a year. And he clearly said he wished he could have imposed even more. We are looking at the cold, ruthless face of political correctness. I am entirely convinced that had the law allowed 10 years in jail, Dr. Sears might well have gotten something pretty close to that. If the law allowed the defendant to be sent to the gulag, I'm entirely convinced the judge would have sent him to a horrible political prison. In that court today, we saw the brutal face of cultural Marxism. We are at war. We are at war for freedom. We are at war for a free press. It was a very touching scene in the court once, you know, it was obvious that the sentence would be imposed and Dr. Sears would be hauled off to the cells today. Experienced courtroom observers knew this was coming. First of all, there were a number of armed police there, three, with handcuffs. Now, that doesn't normally occur in trials. The fact there had not been a big police presence, at least not the uniform presence, in the court during the earlier proceedings. Now there was, and it was obvious they had been alerted that they would be called upon. So Dr. Sears was handcuffed. His wife was in the court. He handed her and his young son. His young son, I think, will have forever etched in his mind his father being taken off in handcuffs. Not for having assaulted somebody, not for having wounded somebody, but for having expressed political and religious opinions in a nonviolent way in a publication. Gee, isn't that the type of thing they do in places like North Korea, and Cuba, and various wretched third world dictatorships? Yep. They put writers in jail. That's what Canada did today in a disgraceful scene in a Toronto court. So Dr. Sears handed over his cell phone and his car keys to his wife, but wanted to keep his crucifix and chain because he is a Christian. Unlike the cultural Marxists who dominate our judicial system. So a woman in the audience yelled out, "This was wrong, this is wrong." And the judge threatened her that she'd be removed from the court. And she left the court in tears. She's a person from Eastern Europe. She'd grown up under communism. And she'd seen what communism is. And we are not the free world anymore. And I gave an interview to some members of the Yellow Vest movement earlier tonight. And I pointed out to them, number one, we are in a war. Let's make no mistake about it. And we do not live in a free country. And if well-meaning, naive fellow citizens sometimes say, well, yeah, we live in a free country. It's our duty respectfully, gently, or with whatever tone you feel best, to tell them, no, sir, no, we do not. Are you kidding? We don't live in a free country. You're not free. You're not free to criticize powerful, politically privileged minorities. And, of course, the enemies of freedom were able to yuck it up tonight. Warren Kinsella, one of the original complainants who made it his job, along with his wife Lisa Kinsella, to try to drive Your War News out of business, was applauding the justice system, but grousing that it had taken so long. The spokesman for the Center of Israel and Jewish Affairs, that's the main Jewish lobby, a man by the name of Noah Shack, called Dr. Sears' sentence a moment of justice. Those who promote hatred must be held accountable. What starts with words can often lead to violence. That's a very easy conclusion. On that basis, no criticism of any privileged minority should be allowed, because, of course, it might lead to violence. Well, anything might lead to violence. In fact, Dr. Sears, in his submissions, had a number of examples where Your World News, being an outlet for unpopular views, actually headed off violence. Once very angry and frustrated people realized that Your War News would reflect their concerns, or their particular, in some one instance, a particular case, promised violence was averted. It's in conclusion, it's been a very sad day for free speech in Canada. Where do we go from here? Well, we are absolutely going to an appeal. In fact, notice of appeal was filed, I believe, yesterday, Wednesday, by another lawyer for Dr. Sears. And this lawyer will go appear in before a provincial court judge this morning, or Friday morning, to seek bail for Dr. Sears' pending appeal. And this would normally be granted, but of course these are not normal times. So I will be back to you reporting on that in a subsequent broadcast. I'm going to take my musical break now. This is Paul Fromm. You're on the Fighting Side of Me. I'm going to play some inspirational folk music from Ulster, or sometimes called Northern Ireland. And the Ulster Scots played a big role in the settlement of the United States and of Canada and Australia. And they brought their music with them. And you'll probably recognize some of these tunes. This is Ulster Scots folk music. This is Paul Fromm, and you're on the Fighting Side of Me.
with pride and say, good Lord, Northern Ireland, Northern Ireland. I am James, the Victor Tay, and sing until your dying day.
And you wonder
why I am so proud.
You wonder why I sing so loud.
Cause my Aunt James is home or away. She's Northern Ireland all the way.
For we are
people true and proud. Sing with pride and sing with loud.
Northern Ireland, Northern Ireland. I will
people true and proud.
Sing with pride.
Some Ulster, those are some Ulster folk songs, part of America and Canada's heritage. This is Paul Frommer on the Fighting Side of Me. Back with you again tomorrow, same time, midnight Eastern time. The show is repeated at 8 in the morning and 4 in the afternoon. All of those are Eastern Standard Time. And I sign off tonight, as I always do, with the anthem of the real Canada, the Maple Leaf Forever. This is Paul Fromm, and you're on the Fighting Side of Me.
In days of yore, from Britain's shore, Wolfe the dauntless hero came and planted firm Britannia's flag on Canada's fair domain. Here may it wave our boast, our pride, and joined in love together, the thistle, shamrock, rose, and twine, the maple leaf forever. The maple leaf, our emblem dear, the maple leaf forever. God save our queen, and heaven bless the maple leaf forever. And Lundy's Lane, our brave fathers side by side for freedom, homes and loved ones dear, firmly stood and nobly died. And those dear rights which they maintained, we swear to yield them never. Our watchword evermore shall be the maple leaf forever. The maple leaf, our emblem dear, the maple leaf forever. God save our queen, and heaven bless the maple leaf forever. Dominion now extends from Cape Race to Nootka Sound. May peace forever be our lot, and plenteous store abound. And may those ties of love be ours, which discord cannot sever, and flourish green o'er freedom's home, the maple leaf forever. The maple leaf, our emblem dear,